Welcome to Ponda Podcast. My name is Dr. Nikki Jones Stockreef. I'm a pediatrician with a focused practice in neurodevelopmental disabilities, working in Simcoe County, Ontario. I will be your host for today's discussion on how parents view a needs-based service delivery model for children with disabilities. Currently in Ontario, families seek specialized diagnostic services to better understand the needs of their child and determine a diagnosis. There are long wait times, uneven distribution of diagnostic resources, and inequitable availability of services and funding depending on the diagnosis made. A diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder, for example, currently affords families access to a suite of resources and dedicated funding. Other diagnoses, such as attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, do not lead to the same level of support, even when the child has potentially a similar level of need based on their day-to-day struggles. Joining me today is Dr. Salemenesh Tsigay-Lagasse, pediatrician in her final year of developmental pediatrics fellowship at Holland Bloorview Kids Rehabilitation Hospital, University of Toronto. Welcome, Dr. Lagasse. We are also joined by Dr. Benjamin Klein, developmental pediatrician and medical director at Lansdowne Children's Center and co-author of the Functional Abilities Classification Tool. Welcome, Dr. Klein. Dr. Tsigay, can you tell us a bit about your advocacy project?
Thank you so much, Dr. Nikki. Thank you for the introduction. So generally in medicine, it's known that doctors do a thorough assessment of a specific case and give a diagnosis. And the diagnosis usually tells us what treatment to prescribe. In child disability, a big part of treatment is services. And there is a considerable debate and tension remain regarding the best approach to thinking about how to engage with and serve children with developmental challenges and their families. In many places, service eligibility is based on diagnosis. This approach puts pressure on families to get a diagnosis and on service providers to make a diagnosis. So as part of my fellowship advocacy project, I wished to explore this issue more. It was one of the issues that really was heart-touching for me to see happening in a high-resource data area. And I had the greater chance to be supervised under Dr. Benjamin Klein, and we thought an advocacy project involving parents could be an initial stepping stone to show the challenge faced by families and children navigating the system. We decided to have podcast interviews involving parents and professionals through the PONDA team. I interviewed 5 parents, and I will be sharing with the audience today those parents' view on the topic. And I will include the parents' bio at the end of this podcast. Thank you.
Excellent. Such an interesting project, Dr. Tsigay.
Thank you.
As mentioned, currently in Ontario, service eligibility is based on diagnosis. Access to grants and special education may be limited if a specific diagnosis has not been given, and some diagnoses allow access to more supports than others. As clinicians, however, we know intervention in childhood disability should be based on the functional needs of the child rather than the diagnosis. Dr. Tsigay, tell us what parents have to say about this.
That's a very important point, Dr. Nikki. And I would like to start by quoting a mother of 3 children who shared her view of a diagnosis. Her children were diagnosed with complex childhood trauma, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and oppositional defiant disorder. And this mother told me the diagnosis doesn't do much. The diagnosis of neurodevelopmental disorder as a result of complex trauma doesn't mean anything in the school system unless they are diagnosed as learning disabled. ADHD is a misunderstood diagnosis. It is not cut and dry like autism or something visible in a diagnosis. So maybe people just don't know what services are needed for youth like this. The stressful impression it puts on it is feeling like there isn't support available for you and you are a lone man trying to navigate how you are going to raise these kids to be functioning members of society with the limited options you have available for support. There is a short video of another mother's view that I would like to share with you.
Why does it have to be diagnosis based? If a child's not meeting their milestones, if there's something going on, if they're limited in their function, or if there's, you know, why are we being held by a diagnosis? I don't understand that. Like, I just think a family physician or a pediatrician should be able to make a referral. Easy peasy, no diagnosis. This is something that we're seeing. I've flagged this as being a challenge. I think that this child needs interventions. It should not be diagnosis based.
So interesting. Dr. Klein, do you want to comment on that?
Sure. Thanks for having me on the podcast. If I could step back for a second, the issue here really is what we call stuff. Like a child has a problem, a disability or something, and we need to call it something in order to direct services or treatments to that child. And that's a complicated issue. So what we're talking about is the use of medical diagnoses, which are kind of do you or do you not have something like autism or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And the fundamental problem there is that many children with a diagnosis like autism will be very different from each other and have different needs, different severities of condition, and so will require different treatments and supports. So the yes or no autism doesn't tell you what that child needs, which will be vastly different from what another child with autism needs. So the next question is, well, what do we do to try to parse that out, to try to get people what they need? And that would be using a function-based classification system. And what that means more in plainer English is a description of where the child's skills at are in the different areas. So to run with the autism example, that's mostly a social communication disability. So we can then take social skills or social communication and somehow describe just where is that child's skills, or how delayed are they, where are their skills? And that would tell you what that child needs in a given environment, like at school or at home, much more accurately than do or do they not have autism.
Absolutely. Part of making a diagnosis is thinking about prognosis and how is this child going to develop over time, and helping the family really understand what the needs of the child are. But a functional-based system might not have the same ability to provide a prognosis. What do you think about that dynamic, Dr. Klein?
So we're not really talking about one or the other using diagnosis or categorical diagnosis is kind of, is it or is it not? Or a functional system where really you need both. The medical diagnosis is important for medical treatment because a medical diagnosis will give a doctor, medical practitioner, a quick, what types of things are on the table to help this person? Like, for example, for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, one of the standard treatments would be medications. Whereas for autism, medications doesn't really comprise a central treatment directly for autism. Although kids with autism can use medications, that's a different story. So the medical diagnosis is helpful for medical treatment, whereas the functional information, or where's this child's skills at, is basically what that's asking, is more helpful in other environments, like in school, or what therapy a child needs. At our center, children get started with therapy before they receive a diagnosis, and the therapists don't really need the diagnosis to do what they do, which is if a child has a communication impairment, and that may be autism, it may be sort of just isolated language issues, or language disorder would be the diagnosis there, or things that don't have commonly used diagnoses, like complex trauma. If that child has a communication problem, then that's what they do. So in summary, both are really needed.
Exactly. Dr. Tsige, do you have more feedback from families about how they feel about this?
Yes, definitely. I'll just invite you to listen to the following audio as it expresses the challenge we are talking about.
I find with the FASD specific diagnosis, I find that it's that stigma, right? Of, oh, it could have been prevented, right? But even if a disability could have been prevented, it's still one of these things where it's not the child's fault. So we still need to support the child. So that's where I think that if we started to look at the mental health, like all disabilities as a whole, and then we start to fund, you know, based on the need, that would be so much better, because then we're hitting, you know, if somebody needs speech or somebody needs OT, instead of looking at it like, oh, they have autism, so they must be really high functioning and they need all this funding and all this stuff, you know what I mean? So we really, you know, looking at the functionality is so important, because, you know, there's such a varying level of spectrums.
Very interesting. Now, I want to go a little bit off script here, because I'm thinking about some of my patients, and certainly in the preschool system, they're able to access resources like early intervention resources, regardless of whether they have a diagnosis or not. And there are school-based rehab services available, occupational therapy, physiotherapy, that can be accessed when the school asks, and a diagnosis isn't necessary for that. So what are these additional resources that this parent is talking about?
I could jump in there. I certainly see that as well. In the preschool age system is more function based and doesn't require a diagnosis, whereas the therapies like the communication therapy, occupational therapy, physiotherapy does exist through the school, but that service is much lower quantity and less comprehensive. That doesn't involve the parent. I mean, why should a child with a movement disability receive their physiotherapy only through the school board? The family should be the central place where the child's getting therapy, because that parent needs to be involved, and the school staff should be involved too. So that theoretically children have access to services, but the reality is it's much thinner on the ground. There is a mini cliff around that 4 or 5 years old, where that service accessibility drops off dramatically. And of course, there's the money. I mean, autism gives a big funding package that currently parents have a lot of discretion, which has upsides to it.
So we may be talking about quantity of service and funding for that quantity, not whether you can obtain that service or not.
Yes, it's how much, how timely, how much collaboration is there? It's the quality overall of the service. And there's other pieces too that are hard for us to see. I'm told that certain funding programs have internal processes to determine eligibility that depend on diagnoses. These things aren't really made transparent. And I won't get into the details of which ones, and then there's this kind of paranoia of I need these big ticket diagnoses, and they're really autism, intellectual disability, and learning disabilities, I would say, are the big ones that are, I think of them as big ticket diagnoses, which doesn't make any sense, like from a patient point of view.
Do you think a functional approach would broaden, or on the other hand, limit access?
to care if we relied more on a functional approach to service delivery? How would that impact inclusion into community services?
So a functional system, I think, would be a lot more efficient in targeting resources to kids. And what that might look like in practical terms, just take the example of a language or communication impairment, which are found in a wide range of diagnoses. If there is a scale to measure just where that child's communication ability is or disability, then that would be proportionate to what services get put in place in the classroom, how much articulation or speech therapy the child might need, based on the child's ability, disability level, and based on another functional parameter that the research has really borne out, is the concept of participation, or how much a child's involvement in life situations is impacted by their disability. So if a child has a more severe participation restriction in school, in the community, at home, then that would warrant more urgency for therapy or supports in order to boost up the participation. So the ability levels give you an idea of what the participation restrictions are likely to be. And the participation restriction is really how things are hitting the concrete.
And Dr. Tsige, do you have some information from parents about how they feel about access to care based on function?
Yes, yes, Dr. Jones, community inclusivity and access to services were important issues raised by the parents. One mother asks, "I applaud all of the work the families with autism have done, and they have been able to secure funding for intervention, which are also proven by research to work for children with Down syndrome. But a family who has a child with Down syndrome, they can't get access to ABA funding because they don't have an autism diagnosis. Why is that?" And another mother mentioned, "There is a huge gap in service for children and youth mental health community." And she said, "If everyone started looking at what people can do and what they need support with, I think that will change everything, because then they are not going to be focused on diagnosis and putting people into categories. Instead, they are just going to be like, what do you need help with? How can I help you? What's your superpower? I am constantly looking at grants, and they really focus on diagnosis. And so when you apply to things, if you don't fit the criteria, you are automatically denied. With autism, it's different because there is a different funding stream. The autism program has OAP, whereas with my boys, I have to navigate through things to find funding for the support they need, because they need so much. It can be tricky when you don't have the money to be able to get them what they need, and you are constantly sourcing out." And I would like to invite you to hear this mother, how the limited access to service forced her to search a diagnosis.
I think that if a diagnosis wasn't essential to get service, I think I would not be searching for a diagnosis, to be honest. I wouldn't feel a need to have to search for, you know, I feel he needs that, but I wouldn't have to feel the need to search for an autism diagnosis if he didn't need that diagnosis to get the funding that he needs to get the services he needs. Like, I wouldn't feel like I'm constantly trying to fight a battle that may or may not be won in the end, because essentially I'm not fighting really for a diagnosis. I'm just fighting for the funding and level of support that he needs, right?
I'm really hearing frustration in that parent's voice. It must have been difficult listening to her and other parents who really want the best for their children, but they don't feel they can access it because of lack of the right diagnosis.
I agree.
I can pick up on a couple things in there. Of course, parents are going to be frustrated because the system is very diagnosis focused, although not completely everywhere on the ground level. But one thing is certain is that we don't have a universal system of, well, how do we categorize different functional abilities, like, or different levels of disability in a functional way? There is no standard way to do it. So what I've heard is, okay, well, let's not focus on diagnosis. Now what? Well, there isn't something to go to. So that's where the work of creating some kind of functional system that's usable from in between doctors and therapists and service providing agencies. So ultimately, we all need to agree on some kind of system that categorizes ability and disability by function or severity. And adding that to the diagnosis gives a fairly complete picture, along with some other, of course, detailed information, but of what a child's needs are that might be used in a service provision model.
I mean, I would see that as so helpful and something that you could track over time, because of course, regardless of the diagnosis, how a child is performing, functioning at home, at school is going to change over time based on a number of factors.
Say a reading disability, that with the right therapy, that child's reading skill can get a lot better. Or a child with autism, maybe at 2 has very little communicative function, but at 5 has made tremendous gains. So this is not a static thing, a function classification. It changes over time and it's subject to revision as children's change.
Yeah. Is this something that we should be pushing for as physicians? Should it come from administration or government? Dr. Sige, how do parents feel about this?
Yeah, that's a very important question, Dr. Jones. And I asked what change the parents would like to see during my interview, and their response was as follows. One mother said, take a greater look at the wide scope of diagnosis that can occur and not have tunnel vision on the diagnosis that receives support, but being more inclusive to the rest of this diagnosis and do need support, but maybe aren't as well recognized. Another mother said, we have to remember behind these kids we want to help are the families. If you want these children to be functional, independent and contributors to society and be all they can be, you have to give them access to what they need, and you have to support the families as they help their children do this. And as concluding remarks of the mother's voice, I have added 2 more audio messages that I would like you to listen.
Makes no sense whatsoever, right? If a child needs to have access to interventions, they need to have access to interventions regardless. So that's another piece. So it's like, so your CP diagnosis gets you access, but depending on your CP diagnosis might get you more or less access. That's not okay. So you know, it's just, listen, if a child needs access to services, they need access to services. Let's find a way to deliver those services to them. And let's not make it difficult for the parents to try to access those services for their child.
I'm thankful that I'm able to do what I can for my son. But I know there's kids that are needing a lot more help than even we are. And I'm not saying we don't need it, but I know there's other kids that are struggling more than we are. And we need to get them into services because, you know, they say early intervention, but I just say any intervention.
Great. So it's so good to have the parents' voice. Dr. Klein, what should our next steps be?
I think, the end goal would be that there is some kind of function classification system that we're all using, like physicians, educators, therapists, the service system. So we're speaking a common language that describes functioning. And a good example of that is the gross motor function classification system that's used in cerebral palsy, because it gives a really nice, quick description in a 5-level scale of broadly what can someone do. Level 5 being in a wheelchair, unable to wheel oneself, and a level 1 being basically somebody can walk but might have trouble on uneven ground. So that really gives a great snapshot, that 5-level scale. So we need something like that that covers the more broad range of a person's functioning, including communication and cognition and executive functioning, social skills and emotion regulation. Once we have the major functions captured, then we can distill it down into some kind of scale that can deliver what can this child do and in what kind of environment might they do well. In other words, what kind of supports do they need in a given environment, such as a classroom or in a home? Now, it would be hard to coordinate every sector of society. So my little research group has just gone and created a scale, and we called it the Functional Abilities Classification Tool. And it's embedded into my medical records, and I use it. I use a 4-level scale for all these functions.
Right.
So it helps me greatly get a broader view of the patient, of the person. The next steps would be, you know, sharing it with others or something similar. Maybe someone could create a better scale. But at the end of the day, we all need to speak the same language, so we're not running around having reassessments and second opinions, which happens very frequently. Because the right diagnosis that didn't get this, or the wrong diagnosis that didn't acquire the service, wasn't obtained, so a family might go to another institution to get another assessment which said the same thing. At the same time, as many children are waiting long periods of time for an assessment, so that cycle needs to be broken with a system that encapsulates a child's functioning better.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like we have a lot of work to do to incorporate that functional approach into our practices the way you have, Dr. Klein, and hopefully we'll be able to promote tools like that, the FACT, and ensure that it's used more often in assessments that are done across the province. I want to thank Dr. Klein for you joining us today and sharing your experience, and for Dr. Tsige for your very interesting advocacy project interviewing families about a functional approach to service delivery.
Thanks for having me.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Excellent. And we're signing off from Ponda Podcast. See you next time.
Thank you for listening Parents' View on Need-Based Service Delivery for Children with Disability podcast. This is Salamin Isike, and I am happy to share a brief biography about the courageous mothers who participated in our podcast. The first mother is Amanda Morris-West. Mrs. Amanda Morris-West is an adoptive parent of 3 children, male 11 years old, female 9 years old, and another female 8 years old. Amanda is a child and youth care practitioner who has worked in the field of child and youth care for over 20 years. Mrs. West shared with us that her children have all been diagnosed with neurodevelopmental disorder as a result of complex trauma stemming from their early childhood experiences prior to adoption. The children were adopted at the ages of 4, 3, and 2 years and had been in foster care for approximately 2 years prior to their adoption. Their diagnosis presents with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder symptoms, as well as some oppositional defiant disorder and obsessive compulsive disorder symptoms. Mrs. West faced challenges in accessing services for her children, as there were no services that are in line with their diagnosis. She described ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, as a misunderstood diagnosis, as there are no supports available and it does not thoroughly explain the abilities and disabilities of her children. She shared that accessing ongoing support at school was difficult. Mrs. West emphasizes that it would be helpful to have greater understanding of the needs of these children. Instead of labeling them with ADHD, it would have been helpful to outline the areas of need and have a system to support their participation in different areas of functioning. Her message to leaders was to take a greater look at the wider diagnosis and be inclusive of the rest of the diagnoses that need supports within the system. Our second mother was Frances Langstaff. Ms. Langstaff is a registered early childhood educator. She has two of her nephews in her care who have special talents, 6 and 11 years old. She is a huge advocate for her nephews and continues to work very hard to ensure that they get all the support they need. The diagnosis for the older child presents as learning disability, global developmental delay, and fetal alcohol syndrome. For the younger one, he presents as early childhood trauma disorder, autism spectrum disorder, fetal alcohol syndrome, ADHD, global developmental delay. Ms. Langstaff shares they were told the diagnosis of global developmental delay will not get them much service, so she had to dig more in terms of diagnosis to get services. Ms. Langstaff spent almost 5 years navigating services as the available grants focus on diagnosis, and this has forced her to push for the addition of the diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder to her younger child. She states she wouldn't have wanted to add another label on her child if diagnosis was not essential. She says, "I'm not fighting for diagnosis. I am fighting for service. And it would have been helpful if they would start to fund based on the need instead of diagnosis." Ms. Langstaff's message to leaders is that the question should be, what do you need help with, not focusing on diagnosis. She emphasized, if we did not need diagnosis, people would stop searching and focus on helping the children. Our third mother was Ashley Linde. Ms. Linde is a mother of two children, an 11-year-old with autism spectrum disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and learning difficulty, and an 8-year-old male with ADHD and social anxiety. She is a stay-at-home mother as she needed to homeschool her first son due to an availability of services she needed for him, as he was having behavioral challenges at school. They were on a wait list for autism services as he did not qualify for an IBI program. At an early age, they were able to access services because they both were premature, but after the age of 6 years, Mrs. Linde had to support them at home. She mentioned, ADHD diagnosis does not give you extra help. Although she feels the diagnosis did capture their presentation, it did not do much for services. She mentioned, it was rather better when they did not have any diagnosis at an early age, as they used to be supported by the resource teachers based on their need. Mrs. Linde's message to the leaders is to focus on availability of services to older children and adults. Quoting her, "They just say early intervention, but I say any intervention." Our fourth mother is Brenda Agnew. Mrs. Agnew is a mother of two children, 16 years old and 15 years old males. The younger has a history of GMFCS level 4 cerebral palsy, deafness secondary to carnicterus, and was a preterm baby born at 29 weeks. Mrs. Agnew sits on multiple advisory committees, including PONDA and CPNET. She shared that for her son, access to services was initially not complicated as he got admitted to the pre-med treatment pathway. As he got older, he had to attend two different services, and the major challenge for the family was lack of shared goal setting and having much focus on things he was not able to do. Mrs. Agnew emphasizes, functionality is individualized, and whatever that might look like for the individual, our goal should be to work in line with that. She shares, her experience with different health professionals and how their approach was different based on the diagnosis. She mentions diagnosis should never be a barrier to look at function. Mrs. Agnew shares that although in her case, having a formal diagnosis was helpful in terms of accessing services, it led to automatic assumption of the things her son was not capable of doing. He was excluded from social and recreational opportunities because of his diagnosis, and she had to work hard to get him into as a credit-earning student, as that was not available in the school system for children like him. Mrs. Agnew's message to leaders is to change the wording and approach to make it easy for parents and children to access services based on their need. After all, what matters is that the child opened the door, not how he opened the door. Our final mother was Mrs. Patty Davis. Mrs. Patty Davis is a grandmother of three children, 13 years old, 11 years old, and 9 years old males with behavioral diagnosis. The older has a history of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, and learning difficulty. Mrs. Davis emphasizes the main challenge she had was not understanding what the diagnosis meant and not being aware of the support they needed or was available. She mentioned it would have been better to have a list of the things her children needed support with rather than the diagnosis. She emphasizes supporting the family in addition to the children would be important. We are very thankful to our Courageous Mothers for participating in this podcast. Thank you.